in the sun. Sorry. Okay, so Damascus Gate. All right. That's helpful to have somebody here that's been there and seen that. So that's good. But apparently, you know, maybe it was patterned after what they saw in Damascus. Maybe that's why they call it that. Okay, so we get our way down to Shechem. Now, we saw in the map earlier that Shechem was in from the Jordan River to the west. And so a little bit about Shechem. The Canaanite dwelt there when Abraham arrived. We saw that in verse number 6. So the Canaanite was in the land. All right. So there were Canaanites there. Now, remember all the ites that God promised to drive out? There was the Canaanites and the Hittites and the Perizzites and the Girgashites and all the ites. All right. So the Canaanites were kind of an overall name for a majority of them, but there was some specifics among them as well. Jacob lived there after leaving Haran, Genesis chapter 33. Remember when Jacob was up there with his uncle and got his wives and his family and things in Genesis 33 and verse number 18. And Jacob came to Salem, the city of Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan, and he came when he came from Padan Aram and pitched his tent before the city. All right, so he went to Shechem as well. So he came down, crossed the Jordan, came over there to Shechem. Okay, so that's another thing. Then it was also attacked and plundered by Simeon and Levi, chapter 34 and verse number 25, that sad chapter of where they deceived the people and they all got circumcised, and while they're all sore and couldn't move, these boys went in there and killed them all. Verse number 25, it says, and it came to pass on the third day when they were sore that two of the sons of Jacob, Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brethren, took each man his sword and came upon the city boldly and slew all the males. And they slew Hamor, the son of Shechem, his son with the edge of the sword, and took Dinah there out of the Shechem's house and went out. All right, so sad story there. The whole chapter 34 is just a sad story. You know, chapter 34 of Genesis is a typical example of God not masking over the realities of heartache. And chapter 34, there's nothing in it that's happy. It's a sad chapter. Then Joseph looked for his brethren who were shepherds there in Genesis chapter 37, verse number 14. 37:14, and he said unto them, Go, I pray thee. This is Jacob talking to Joseph. Go, I pray thee, and see whether it be well with thy brethren and well with thy flocks, and bring me word again. So he went out of the vale of Hebron, and he came to Shechem. All right, so they were down in Hebron, which is way down in the south, and he followed that up. It was quite a ways up there. And he followed that up until he got to where his brothers had been shepherding their sheep there. And then the bones of Joseph were buried there in Genesis, Joshua 24. Joshua 24, after the land was conquered. Joshua chapter 24, they've been dragging around Joseph's bones for 40 years, and they finally get a place to park them. And chapter 24, verse number 32. And the bones of Joseph, which the children of Israel brought up out of Egypt, buried they in Shechem in a parcel of ground which Jacob bought of the hands of Hamor, the father of Shechem, for 100 pieces of silver. And it came to, and it became the inheritance of the children of Joseph. All right. That always intrigues me. I mean, I wonder who it was that was in charge of carrying around that coffin for 40 years. Dragging around, pushing Joseph. Well, I'm carrying Joseph.
Another thing in Jerusalem that I saw, like in Mount Olives, they had a crypt, and they have some kind of process where the body, after a certain amount of time, is reduced down to the bones and put into what's called an ossuary, which is only about so big. So there's a possibility that they didn't have to take a whole, is it ossuary? Yeah, a whole coffin.
Even though they were embalmed?
Well, would he have been embalmed just because he was a leader in Egypt, or could he have requested to have a proper Jewish kind of, I don't know.
I was just going to say, I don't think Joseph would have necessarily been like dealt with the same way according to Jewish tradition, because you understand the customs of the Jewish people haven't been established till Moses. Yeah. Up until this point, they could have done God hasn't told them how you should deal with dead bodies.
Yeah, well, we could definitely search into that. I'm pretty sure it says that he was embalmed.
Yeah.
Okay. In Genesis, but you know, that's not the point of our.
Would it say the bones of Joseph then, or the
same thing?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. But I mean, I don't know. I'm not saying you're wrong, but I don't think that a mummified coffin would shrivel up like a body without the bones. I don't think. Yeah, so I don't know. We'd have to wait and see. All right, and then Shechem was also was in Ephraim's portion and became a Levitical city and a city of refuge. All right, remember that, the cities of refuge. And here in Joshua chapter 21, Joshua chapter 21 and verse number 24. Joshua 21:24. That doesn't look like it. Okay, it's in there somewhere. But I don't see. 31?
21.
And, okay, and they gave Shechem with her suburbs in the Mount Ephraim to be a city of refuge for the slayer and Gezer in this, and her, with her suburbs. Okay, so it was 21 instead of 24. Okay, sorry about that. And then a couple of other things about Shechem here. It was there that Joseph delivered his last address to the people.
Joshua.
I haven't had a real good day today. I was talking to my wife, and it was something that just happened 5 minutes ago, and I couldn't remember. So it's been one of those days. Sorry about that. Joshua delivered his last message. Joshua chapter 24. And verse number 1. I'm not going to read the whole chapter here, but this is his address to the people. Joshua gathered all the tribes of Israel to Shechem and called the elders of Israel for their heads and for their judges and for their officers. And they presented themselves before God. And Joshua said unto all the people, "Thus saith the Lord God of Israel, your fathers dwelt on the other side of the flood and in old time, even Terah, the father of Abraham and the father of Nahor, and they were served other gods." Now, I've got a question for you. It says here that they dwelt on the other side of the flood. What's that mean, Johnny?
Well, I'm assuming then it has to be talking maybe about the Euphrates River.
It is. Not the flood.
There's no logical way of conversion.
The word actually means river. Why they translated a flood, I don't know. But it is confusing. You're right, John. It was the Euphrates River on the other side of the Euphrates. It doesn't actually refer to the Euphrates, but the other side of the river. That's what the word means, the river. So, and you'll see that same word used down later in the chapter when he talked about verse number 15. And he says, "And if it seem evil unto you to serve the Lord and choose you this day whom ye shall serve, whether the gods which your father served that were on the other side of the flood, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land ye dwell, but as for me and my house, we shall serve the Lord." So once again, it talks about the other side of the river. So it was a long ways away, but it certainly wasn't talking about the Noahic flood or something like that.
But that's not where the giants were living.
What giants?
Well, there was the people was a lot bigger than the point where Joshua was saying that he's going to live in that area.
Well, that's the area he chose to live in. But he says here in verse 15, he's talking to the people, and he says, "If it seem evil unto you to serve the Lord, choose you this day whom you will serve, whether the gods of which your fathers served that were on the other side of the flood." All right, so that was the gods of the people down in Ur of the Chaldees, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. That would be the gods of the pagans that were among them. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. So what was your question then?
I thought it was one of those nations was like the bigger people, like the
yes, there were
well type of people.
There were a lot of those the among the Amorites and things of that nation. You know, when they conquered the land, many of them were giants. Johnny?
I was going to say just an interesting note. I mean, it's not really to do with geography, but while we're on the area, it's interesting that even before Abraham, it seems that there might have been people who did worship God, even if they didn't know a lot about him. Because from what I understand, Job was in that area, and possibly before Abraham was. So there were people who worshipped God, even though they didn't really know about very much. They didn't have the lawyers or the writings, but like, I'm just saying that Abraham wasn't the first worshipper of Yahweh.
Probably not.
In that area. There were people before. In fact, there are Babylonian texts today that are almost identical to the book of Job. Like the same story about a man. It's interesting because you'd think if there really was a man like Job, that it would have been recorded by the Babylonians, which it is. Which is really interesting.
Yeah, remember that was the area where the Fertile Crescent was the area most likely where the descendants of Seth would have migrated after the flood. All right, so when they landed in Ararat, they came down the Fertile Crescent and migrated there after the flood. So yeah, you're very possible. Okay. Under the judges, the city was taken by Abimelech when about 1,000 men and women took refuge in a tower which was destroyed by fire. Judges chapter 9. Another one of those terrible stories in the Bible that about the battles and the cruelties and things that they went through. But again, Judges 9 is quite a long story, but you got Abimelech here, the son of Jerubbaal. Who is Jerubbaal? What's his other name?
Gideon.
Gideon. All right, Jerubbaal was Gideon.
There's a quiz question for somebody.
There you go. So he was the son of Gideon, and he went to Shechem unto his mother's brethren and communed with them and with all the family of the house of his mother's father, saying, speak, I pray you, in the ears of all the men of Shechem, whether it be better for you, either that all the sons of Jerubbaal or Gideon, all the sons of Gideon, which are 70, so he's got 70 sons, reign over you, or that one reign over you. Remember also that I am your bone and your flesh. And his mother's brethren spake unto him in the ears of all the men of Shechem, and all the words and all these words, and their hearts inclined to follow Abimelech, for they said, he is our brother. So Abimelech here was, his mother was not the mother of most of these other sons of Gideon, and he decided that, you know, he was going to keep be the king. He was going to reign over them. So the whole chapter is about him trying to overthrow it all, and one of his younger he destroys all of his brothers, but his youngest brother, Jotham, gets away and hides, and then he comes back and he addresses them, and you know, there's a big battle, and you know, the people are hiding in a tower to try to protect themselves. And so in order to kill the people in the tower, they just set fire to the bottom of the tower and smoked them out. So they all died of smoke inhalation. And they might have cooked them too, but the smoke inhalation is probably what got most of them. So it's just a tragic story. There's a lot of those tragic stories in Judges. Judges is one of those books that you just shudder when you read some of that stuff. The tribes assembled there to crown Rehoboam. All right, so who was Rehoboam? Yes, he was a king. Whose son? Solomon's son. Okay, so this is when the kingdom was divided. In 1 Kings chapter 12, the kingdom was divided here because of Rehoboam's foolish decisions. Verse number 1, and Rehoboam went to Shechem, for all the Israel were gathered, were come to Shechem to make him king. And it came to pass when Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who was yet in Egypt, heard it, for he fled from the presence of King Solomon, Jeroboam dwelt in Egypt. All right, so Jeroboam was a servant of Solomon who rebelled against him and decided that he wasn't going to be loyal to Solomon anymore. And Solomon, and then Jeroboam, a prophet, Ahijah, I think it was, told Jeroboam that he was going to be the king. And he was going to get 10 parts of the nation. And Solomon heard of that, and Solomon said, "We've got to get rid of this guy." So Solomon trying to hunt him down and kill him. And so Jeroboam fled, went down into Egypt. And then after Solomon died, then Jeroboam heard that Rehoboam was going to be the king. And then he came out and he went up and met with the people. And then the whole rest of the chapter here is just the deal they were trying to make with Rehoboam. Said, "Listen, if you back off a little bit and lighten up a little bit, Solomon was too hard on us. If you'll just lighten up, we'll serve you faithfully. But if you don't, we won't." And he sought the counsel of the old men. And the old men said, "They're right. Your dad was really hard on him. You got to lighten up." And his peers said, "Forget it. Don't be lightening up. Lay it on heavier. Beat them worse than they were before." And so he followed the advice of his peers, and the nations rebelled against him. Jeroboam took the 12 tribes, or now 10 of the 12 tribes, and became the northern kingdom. Yes, sir.
So the harsh treatment there is referring to like the labor and the taxation, I'm assuming. Technically, the Israelites couldn't be sold as slaves. They were technically his servants. I mean, he pushed them really hard, essentially.
He did push them hard. He taxed them hard. Yeah. But he also, I mean, he says, if my father, well, let's see, I can find the verse here. Verse number 11, "And now whereas my father did lade you with heavy yoke, and I will add to your yoke. My father chastised you with whips, but I will chastise you with scorpions." All right, so he put a heavy yoke on him. Now there's a lot of work, a lot of burdens, a lot of stress that they had to do. And if they didn't do it, he whipped them with whips. And so Rehoboam said, "I'm going to torture you with scorpions instead of whips."
I always thought that sounded almost more metaphorical. Because he really mentions the scorpions. Because who takes scorpions onto a work field and...
Well, it may have been a picture, but at the same time, he was emphasizing there's going to be worse.
Yeah, yeah.
It's going to be worse than what Dad did. And they, of course, rebelled against him, and that was the end of the story. So then after the division, the kingdom, after the division of the kingdom, it became the headquarters of Jeroboam, chapter 12 and verse number 25. "Then Jeroboam built Shechem in Mount Ephraim and dwelt therein and went out from thence and built Penuel." All right, so he fortified Shechem to be the city there that was his capital city there of the northern kingdom. Okay, so this was Jeroboam. So these are things that took place in Shechem. So it's good for us to be able to put all these kind of things together, and we see the overall importance of that city. All right, so let's just back up. I want to show you the big map again so we can just kind of see. There we go, right here. So as you look at Shechem, so you can see where it was. It's kind of in the middle. You got Israel down, or Jerusalem down here, and you got Galilee up here. And so it's in the middle, and it's on the west bank of the Jordan, on the western side of the Jordan. So that's where Shechem was, an important city, became, you know, the central city for the capital city for Jeroboam when he took over the northern kingdom. And he basically got everything above Jerusalem, became Jeroboam's, and from Jerusalem down was Rehoboam's. So any questions about this? Yes, ma'am.
So Shechem is not Samaria or near
Samaria? It's in Samaria.
Oh.
Samaria is a confusing word because Samaria was both a city and an area. There was a city of Samaria, but there's also the area of Samaria. And the area of Samaria, it wasn't called Samaria here, I don't think, not until, I don't think, I'd have to check on that, I don't think it was called Samaria until after the captivity, because that's when the people there were intermarried with the pagans that were See, when they went into captivity, the northern kingdom went into captivity at the end of the northern kingdom's time. Hoshea failed, and then they all went into captivity all over in Assyria and all over up in here. And then the Assyrians then took and brought back people from all the other pagan lands that they had conquered and dumped them there so that they could keep peace and keep it calm and not let the land go to pieces. And that's what they intermarried with all these other people from other places. Generally?
So if the Israelites had obeyed and not caused issues, they would have been able to walk just straight from Egypt down there, just up into Israel, where it was the promised land.
No. Say this again?
So you know the Israelites, when God took them to the promised land,
yes,
if they would have obeyed and not murmured and complained, instead of going through the wandering in the desert, they would have just gone straight up into...
Well, yes, they could have, but God knew that the main reason God didn't do that wasn't just because they complained, but God knew that they would see war right away, and he knew that if they saw war, they would fear and complain and run on terror. And so God took them another way so that they wouldn't have to see the...
And if they hadn't gone over the Red Sea, the judgment wouldn't come on the...
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
they would have chased them too.
You realize, like, you almost think to yourself, why walk through the Red Sea? Just walk on land. But I know, but I'm saying you almost think that, looking at the map, but then you have to think about the geography as, like, why they got them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's another whole story. If we get our way down in there during the life of Joseph,
yeah.
What we're going to do next time is we're going to zero in on Abraham's life there in Israel, in Israel itself, and where Abraham lived in the various places, and look at each place that he lived and when he lived there, and in the scriptures that were capitalized on that. And then following that, we'll look at Isaac and see, I did some of that, and I found some things that I didn't really understand, but now it makes it more clear about Isaac and where he lived during that time. And it'll just help us to be able to picture all these things and put it all together in a better way. Okay? Alrighty. Any other questions? Okay.